Blog Talk Radio.
I thought my jokes were bad.
Give me one reason why I shouldn't have my boy here pull your head off.
How about a magic trick? I'm gonna make this pencil disappear. Ta-da! It's gone. Oh, and by the way, the suit, it wasn't cheap. You ought to know, you bought it.
Sit. I want to hear proposition.
Let's wind the clocks back a year. These cops and lawyers wouldn't dare cross any of you. I mean, what happened? Did your balls drop off? You see, a guy like me...
Freak.
A guy like me... Look, listen. I know why you choose to have your little group therapy sessions in broad daylight. I know why you're afraid to go out at night. The Batman. See, Batman has shown Gotham your true colors, unfortunately. Dent, he's just the beginning. And as for the television's so-called plan, Batman has no jurisdiction. He'll find him and make him squeal. I know the squealers when I see them. And...
what do you propose?
It's simple. We kill the Batman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Yes, yes, yes. Ha, ha, ho, ho, hee, hee, hee. I never get enough of Heath Ledger, the late Heath Ledger. Boy, is he missed. When you hear that phenomenal interlude from the Dark Knight movie, wow, I don't know how they're going to be able to top that performance. I think they just cannot do that. Folks, once again, welcome to Grindhouse Sundays, courtesy of Afternoon Radio. We have the Comic Shop up first, and batting second, we have Afternoon Radio. Matter of fact, folks, we definitely want you to stick around for the 7 p.m. broadcast because we are expecting legendary bassist, producer, music icon, definitely someone of note, Andre Simone, Prince's bassist, one of the founding members of the Revolution. He's coming through at around 7 o'clock, so you do not want to miss that show. But, of course, we have the Comic Shop right now. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, again. 646-915-9620. Normally, I would go into a musical interlude. Let's just do the damn thing. Of course, we have the indefatigable Captain Kirk. Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Let's get it started.
And we have, of course, Daryl B, and I don't have his clip. Daryl, just come on in. I'll get your clip. Oh, thank you.
Mike,
Darryl,
thanks.
What's up?
Mike, thanks to the movie Looper for giving us one of the eternal geek questions all time. If you had chance to kill Hitler as a baby, would you do it?
Well, that's a good one. I'm hearing a lot of good things about that movie, actually. We're going to talk about it in a few moments. Again, folks, let's just get into it. The Comic Shop, Daryl B., Captain Kirk, myself. First up, I don't know if this is good news or bad news, gentlemen. I'm inclined to think it's good news. Matter of fact, it prompted me to put out feelers to get this young man on our show. Hopefully we'll get Mark Miller on the show. Scotsman Mark Miller of Wanted fame and of Kick-Ass fame, Kick-Ass 1 and Kick-Ass 2 coming forward. We're hearing that he was hired by Fox Studios as a consultant for the Marvel Universe. What are your thoughts on this, Daryl?
I don't like it. I really like it. You want to know why? There's Mark Waid out there, all right? There's Busick out there, all right? There's Keith Giffen out there. There's Stan Lee is too old, of course, but there's John Romita Jr. out there. There's guys more in touch with regular Marvel history out there than that could find creative ways to unmix what Fox has messed up here to do their stuff. Millar likes to give you flashy explosions. Millar likes to give you shock value. But can Millar work out continuity issues into giving you a good story? I don't think so. And you want proof of that, okay? If you think and the examples I brought up, Keith Giffen made Legion of Superheroes readable to the unwatched eye. And we all know the amount of continuity stuff they have, okay? Mark Waid has done continuity fixes on no less than 10 different properties. The most right up front being he unscrewed up Flash's thing before Jeff Johns re-screwed it up. Okay, he's also done a turn on the Legion of Superheroes. He's done a turn on X-Men. He's done a turn on Avengers. He's done a turn on Daredevil now. And then with Busick, hey, hello, Avengers Forever? All that mixed up time stuff before Bendis came in, he was able to pull the plot points that made no sense and tie them in a way that did make sense. Millar has not shown me that he could do that with any property, but you're hiring him to be an executive, or at least to oversee this. And you're the fool that just did X-Men First Class. Well, essentially you say, oh, all those guys that love X-Men regular history, we're going to just screw up with all of them. We're going to screw with how the history is. I don't know about this one, Afro-Nerd. Back to you.
All right, a couple of things. A complaint or a critique that has been brought to our attention, and the captain's aware of this, is that sometimes we speak a little too insider. So I'm going to try to open up this stuff, to the listeners that are deeply involved with comic book lore, comic book history. This is no big deal. But for folks that want to learn, we're going to have to back this stuff a little bit. Again, we're talking about Mark Miller, a Scottish comic book writer who has become a major player in movies and in comic books. He's most known for writing books like The Authority, Ultimate Fantastic Four, The Civil War, Wanted, as I mentioned before, Wanted with Angelina Jolie, Kick-Ass, which is, I believe, even who's the high-profile person that's been connected with Kick-Ass 2? Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey's on this, and the Ultimates line of the Marvel Universe. So he's responsible for this. So many of his books are highly popular, highly controversial, and also many of the books have been adapted to film. So
okay, well, Afro-Nerd.
Well, hold on one second. Hold on, Darryl.
Okay.
Hold on.
So
what I'm saying to our audience is that this is a major player. And when Daryl B. talks about continuity, we're talking about comic book tropes, comic book history. We have what's in print. We have what's in print. So you're talking about anywhere from a 40-year history to a 70-year history in comic books. So you have what's in print. And then you also have now you have a cinematic continuity. You have a cinematic history. Or cinematic tropes. The issue that I think Fox wants to try to resolve, that's this is what I'm going to ask you, Daryl, before I go to the captain. The issue really is you have all these studios. When Marvel was going through its financial issues, a lot of their properties were sold out to a number of different houses. In recent years, in the last 2 or 3 years, we know now that Marvel, with Disney, has appropriated many of their own properties. But there were a few when they were going through financial strife that they had to give to different studios. Spider-Man, for instance, is with Sony, and the X-Men, formerly Daredevil, now is back, I believe, with Marvel. But Daredevil was with Fox, X-Men is with Fox, Wolverine is with Fox. So it causes problems when you want to have these characters that folks who really know them coexist with each other comfortably. Do you think that Miller will be able to get with the questions with, like, Avengers 2? Really should have Fantastic Four there if it's going to be done right. Fantastic Four is with Fox. Do you think Miller has been brought in to resolve those issues?
Well, and again, when I was speaking before, I was speaking mainly as a comic book fan, okay? And what was out there, the options that were out there for people who didn't understand that. But if you look at all of Millar's books, they have to deal with the deconstruction of the superhero, the deconstruction of the superhero mythos, okay? That's not the type of guy you call where you want to forge bonds and tie bonds between teams and history. That's not the type of dude you bring in to do something like this. Now, I may be wrong, and as Captain always says, yo, Hollywood is considered is concerned with guys that bring in buzz, guys that bring in money, and having him with associated with Kick-Ass, and well, not associated, but him creating Kick-Ass and him having wanted all of that, you bring in his fan base to it. The problem is you need someone to make you care about the characters, care about the history, care about the bonds. You want to make this into a bigger universe. And he only knows destruction of everything you've known before. Right? Think about it. Would Kick-Ass be a book 25 years ago? Would Kick-Ass be a book 15 years ago? No. But you needed heroes such as Daredevil and Spider-Man and Iron Fist and heroes like that to actually create the tropes that Millar destroys, or Millar finds the irony in, or Millar finds the parody in. You know, that's all I'm saying. As a ground level thing, you're bringing him in as a consultant to help you with your continuity issues when this dude's already got continuity issues of his own. That's all I'm saying.
All right, let's go to Captain for a moment. Captain, quickly on this thing, because I want to move along. I'm actually going to go to a musical break. See, what I think is going to happen here, and I want you to kind of figure out what, because you know Hollywood speak better than I do. They're saying they want him in to figure out a shared Marvel universe. Now, it looks like they want him to straighten out the shared Marvel universe for Fox. Now, that's a problem. In other words, I'm looking, just from what I'm seeing here, again, folks, go to comicbookmovie.com. Comicbookmovie.com is an excellent resource when it comes to this stuff. It says here briefly, can Mark Miller sort out Fox's X-Men franchise? While First Class was indeed a redemption from The Last Stand and X-Men Origins Wolverine, it still raised some head-scratching continuity questions. There's a Deadpool movie that's stuck in development limbo and a Fantastic Four reboot that's crucial to the studio's future plans of what they refer to as a shared universe. While we wait to see how these stories unfold, here are the top tweets from the Twitter sphere about the announcement. So they were tweeting about this whole thing with Mark Miller getting this Craig getting this position. But it seems like they want, you know, Marvel has its shared universe, and now Fox has its Marvel shared universe. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, before I get into that, let's understand something. These movies, I should say these characters, they do belong to the geek, they do belong to the nerd, the diehard comic book reader, but it has been leased out to pop culture. okay? The powers that be right now, they're pop culture. Now, when you bring in a consultant to consult for the powers that be, sometimes the powers that be don't listen. They pay somebody and like, yeah, okay, that's nice. We'll take this and this, and we'll do this. And it'll be something else that he or she did not consult upon. And it becomes something entirely different. And this happens a lot of times. And actually, that is the norm. It's not as if they bring somebody in and he has total control over the whole situation. He puts up these 10 things and say, you should move like this. And then they say, okay, I like these four. Keep that six. Come back with something else. Then he comes back with something else, and then they turn around and say, all right, you brought back 10 things. We're going to keep these two. We're going to make it happen with this six. And that's something not entirely what he wanted to do from the beginning. So you do not get a Daryl situation. You do not get his situation. You get exactly what the powers that be actually wanted. Someone to just throw something in their face, and then they could turn around and look at it and say, okay, now we can adapt something on the screen with somewhat of a shared universe for us, which might not necessarily be totally geek and nerd orientated. So I think, as AfroNerd was saying, that this is something for their own universe, which we know is not on point. I don't think it's a universe that's set up to be shared with the other one we were talking about. I think it's just strictly for Fox, which we know is not on point from our standpoint. Just as the great AfroNerd said, you need to have X-Men in an Avenger movie, and vice versa. But I don't think that's what it's for. I think more or less it's for just for what Fox has to offer up at this given time. And if that's the case, here on this show, we're going to have a lot of issues with that. Because some properties, remember it's pop now, you're going to get right, and other ones you're going to say, what the hell just happened? Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd.
Yeah, we're going to go to a quick musical break, and I'll tell you something just before we go there that's really disturbing to me, Captain and Daryl, is, you know, we always end up eventually where they should have been at the first place. After, what, two or three or four different Punisher films, if you include the Dolph Lundgren mess, after all those Punisher films, we finally get an authentic Punisher by way of a 10 or 15-minute YouTube short. That Punisher clip was the Punisher. It took that long. It took that long to get, you know, to do full circle. And it really is problematic when I don't have as many problems with Mark Miller's involvement in this. Because ultimately, I don't think they're going to listen to the guy.
The real deal
is, I know, you know, Dow has issues with Mark Miller. I don't mind Mark Miller as much, but I get his point. I think what the problem is, they're not going to want to listen to the idea that you're going to have to work with Marvel, you're going to have to work with Sony, figure out some kind of way to have these characters work as adjunct characters in a shared Marvel universe in order for it to work properly. Because now they're hitting brick walls thematically when it comes to these characters. When they go into Avengers 2 and go into Thanos and all that whole line, it's going to be very difficult to do that correctly without the Silver Surfer there, without the Fantastic Four. They're going to do it, but it works better thematically because that's the way the story goes. So it's interesting to have Mark Miller come in, but will they listen to them? And already you're hearing a separate shared Marvel universe from Fox's end of things. That's mistake number one. Here we go again with not getting what we really need until maybe 10 years from now, until this is all figured out. Go ahead, Daryl.
But here's the thing, right? I could accept the separate shared universe, all right? But the thing is now, and hey, Cap, remind me again, right? When First Class was being talked about, and we saw what the list of the mutants was as the team, we both went, you know, in about like a year and a half the second movie is going to be practically impossible because of the mishmash of mutants they put in this thing, okay? With Fantastic Four, we said on this show, oh, Galactus, Silver Surfer, that's cool, but you know, if you don't get it right, then you set the whole franchise back 10 years. And, well, it's been set back. And Daredevil came out before we even had the show. But I know the things in that were, people were like, okay, if you're going to do Daredevil, then you got to do the connections, and you got to do, it just seems that Fox jumps in and does stuff. We're going to put this because we're cool. We're putting this thing because we're cool. Because we're cool. We're putting it in. And then they don't think, okay, what do we do next? Well, Moir, you're now the guy. I hope while you're on this, and I see a lot of guys that I respect are supporting this decision, I hope when you're there and that script comes across your desk and you see the script, you don't let them just put anything in, because I don't want to hear from you later, well, we put it in because it was cool. Dude, it's your job to straighten their butts out. Thanks for the time, Al.
All right, Cap, you have one more thing to say. We got to go to a musical break, but go ahead.
Well, yes. Well, you see, what they were banking on, just to add a little bit more to Daryl, what Daryl was saying, but they were banking on when they threw out a lot of those properties, that the casual listener is just going to say, oh, I read this, you know, comic book as a kid or what have you, and it's good to see it on the screen. But what's starting to happen, you know, memes grow. So the casual reader gets more educated. You see? That's a problem. That's a problem. Before it wasn't a problem, but that's what's happening now. Because of shows like this, other shows, and because it is going pop, a lot of the characters are going pop. So the casual reader starts to get more educated. And then he turns around. He or she turns around and says, that's not the way it's supposed to go. You can't do it like that. That's not good. The movie's not good. So eventually, just as the great Afro Nerd says, instead of taking 10 to 15 years, you have to do it right from the beginning and nail it down, because that's what starts to happen. And that's the pace. That's where we are right now. That's the time slot that we're in right now. The casual reader is getting more knowledge. So then it turns into a problem. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, gentlemen, let's go to a quick musical break. This is Monumental by The Last Emperor. We'll be back in a few moments, folks. Let's groove.
Righteous is my career, and conflict is just a job risk. No stopping it when I build rhymes like an Egyptian obelisk. Watch me get down to your province, town, or populace. And my life rhyme is prime, possess the matrix like Optimus. Now you'll get framed like a diploma in your spiritual coma. I'm a black more like Othello, but I will die possess the Mona owner. Diamond studded mic walk on a stage of solid marble. Leave the flyers empty, startled, and yell Shazam like Captain Marvel. Are you aware of the fact that I left mankind devastated, and they still look for the blueprints on the monuments that I've created? See the guards lie. Don't compare my hard drive to your floppy disk. Chicago to Gotham City, New York to Metropolis. From city streets to Athens streets, from the pyramids to the Acropolis. My final resting place will be a solid gold sarcophagus. But what I can understand is how these foolish humans use the mic to their advantage and get lost like the city of Atlantis. You're a long way from Kansas, and this is more than just black bone. You gotta be fresh, yes, and never talk in a whack tone. Cause once I got you in my attack zone, you can click your heels 3 times like Dorothy and couldn't get back home. So drop the mic and save those whack rhymes for later. Cause my battles be more broken arrows than Christian Slater. May the force be with you. It's true, nothing in life is coincidental. The Emperor is monumental.
Monumental.
For mortal men who pretend they never knew.
Monumental.
For these MCs thinking that they can do.
Monumental.
For the simple things in life that suit me. The dead ancestors that speak through me.
Monumental.
For mortal men who pretend they never knew.
Monumental.
For these MCs thinking that they can do me.
Monumental.
For the simple things in life that suit me. The dead ancestors that speak through me.
Monument.
Break a one-niner. It's the democratic socialist mimo. On stage, I keep out invaders like the Great Wall of China. My style transcends where the divine starts and man ends. Understand friends, colleagues, comrades, companions. Los compañeros erect stone temples like pharaohs. Central American Zapatista, Rapandolero. The empire builders must construct societies. That's the difference between my spirit and the man that deceives. the individual to the mass. Imperialist and fascist, titanium and plastic, alkalines and acid.
Yes.
From the cradle to the casket, fantastic stories are told. Stolen maps and soul leading to hidden cities of gold. Hold your ancient art form sacred, let not the 85 forsake it. Hitler's army saw it in 1945 and tried to take it. Infiltrated and break it, no substitutes nor replacements. I've got a stargate leading to other dimensions in my basement. Harness the energies of the mind and designed through a powered spaceship. My food builds on political science and international relations.
Yeah.
Feed off sunlight when the earth grows void of vegetation. Attack the UN like the Klingons to the United Federation. Fully operational, mobile, global, and intercontinental. The Emperor is truly monumental. Mortal men who pretend they never knew me.
Monumental.
For these MCs thinking that they can do me.
Monumental.
For the simple things in life that suit me. The dead ancestors that speak through me.
Monumental.
For mortal men who pretend they never knew me.
Monumental.
For these MCs thinking that they can do me.
Monumental.
For the simple things in life that suit me. The dead ancestors that speak through me.
Monumental.
When worlds collide and are destroyed by earthquakes and tremors, what I build serves as a culture for generations who remember.
Okay.
From the cold hearted to the tender, any ethnicity or gender. Slaves to a higher power, you gain freedom when you surrender. Vengeance, Stilo. Save the gangster talk for Quentin Tarantino. I get deeper than those.
All right, folks, once again, time constraints, I had to pull out the phaser. That was Monumental by The Last Emperor. Folks, once again, that's true hip-hop on a Nerdcore tip for this particular show. I mean, of course, we play Urban Alternative for Afro Radio, but for this show, we play Nerdcore. We try to emphasize more Nerdcore. And if you heard the lyrics on that, this guy's talking about the United Federation for the United Nations. I mean, he's really breaking it down. It's I scratch my head. I know Q was out there listening. I scratch my head daily as to how what passes for current commercial mystery hip-hop, how it's even allowed, where you still hear stuff like this. And you have a Nerdcore tip where the alliteration and the content is so on point, you can actually see the talent in it. But when you have, you know, well, I'm not going to go. That's for another show. I can go on and on. But I stand in wonderment, gentlemen. I don't know how this goes down. Again, that was Monumental. Monumental. All right, folks, don't be scared. This is the Comic Shop. Of course, at 7 p.m., we are expecting music legend, producer, iconic bassist Andre Simone coming through, and Mr. Nelson's friend, childhood friend, His Royal Badness's childhood friend. So that should be a pretty interesting conversation coming up at 7 p.m. All right, I want to do a quick transition, gentlemen. Quickly, giving out our prayers and our good tidings to the official leader of the nerds. I guess he would take that, leader of the nerds, leader of the geeks. Stan Lee gets a pacemaker at 89 years of age, and he's pretty funny about it. You know, you need Stan Lee. He said something about my royal subjects. Don't worry. I'm getting a pacemaker to ensure I live for another 90 years. He said something really wacky, but I thought it was pretty cute. So he said, don't worry, I'll be back in a little bit. So I'm just I'm ensuring that I'll be back for another 90 years. So he's pretty funny about it. So I figure we give our best wishes to his, for him to recoup from the pacemaker, 89 years of age, still kicking. Another transition. You know, I don't think we formally talked about the animated Batman Dark Knight Returns film. Did we talk about this, gentlemen?
No, I don't think so.
We need to talk about this. Daryl, what were your impressions? Again, this is the Frank Miller classic from the mid-80s. Definitely a classic, definitely one of those books, whether it's The Watchmen, whether it's this book. There's a number of books in the mid-80s that I think turn things around for even Frank Miller and Daredevil. There's a certain book that you would even agree, Daryl, that for some reason they changed the meme. And comic books have never been the same. And this is one of them. So this has been adapted. This Frank Miller classic has been adapted for animated moviegoers. And I guess the animation style is very reminiscent of the book. It does remind you of the book. There were some changes slightly, but I actually liked it. I thought it was pretty good. Peter Weller from RoboCop was the voice of Batman in this one. He played an old – and one quick thing too, Darius, because I hate to do this, but we do have to kind of be didactic for our audience and explain stuff. This story, Frank Miller's take on Batman was a future Batman. You had a female Robin, and you have Batman in his mid-50s. So he's an older, grizzled Batman that returns. And he returns to kick ass, but he's doing it from, I think, think Clint Eastwood without the empty chair. He's coming back, and he's, he's kind of, he's battered. He's got problems. So what were your thoughts on this adaptation of the book, Daryl?
As a guy who wasn't the biggest fan of the book, all right, I have to say the movie stays true to the book, all right? And my hate for the book isn't because of the story. Well, it's partially because of the story. I was always more of a Superman guy. I was more a Superman guy when this thing came out. So imagine my surprise of how he's portrayed in the book, all right? And also, I'm more of a superhero guy. This book can be argued, along with Watchmen, started the deconstruction of one of my favorite parts of this art form. Because everybody who listed this book as a reference, during the 90s especially, right, they took all the wrong lessons from the book. And it could be argued this started the grittier, darker takes on superheroes, which almost killed the business. That being said, I'm going to go back and say the movie is true to the book. What would you say, 95%? They nailed the tone of the book. They nailed the major plot points of the book. It just like... Under the Red Hood, even more so than their adaptation of All-Star Superman, this one nails. I mean, it nails it. If you read the book and you're a diehard fan of the book and the points and Batman and Carrie and the mutants and all of that, you shouldn't have a real problem with how they took the story, because, like McDuffie told us, you have to adapt some things for your audience that doesn't read books. But they managed to do it and not lose the core plot point, at least in the first part, of where the book was going, if you catch the drift after murder.
Captain, your thoughts on this movie?
All right. I have a problem with Darryl's answer. Let me tell you why I have a problem. All right, you're being nebulous. You never said whether you like it or not. Don't be a politician here. It's not Romney versus Obama. Did you like it or not? We're dealing with Batman.
I said I liked it. I don't like the story, but as a comic book movie, animated movie, I like it. I think it was very true to form. I said that. It was very true to the book. It was very well done.
Okay. All right. Sorry for my outburst then. Maybe I didn't hear correctly. All right. So my opinion was wrong. All right. I liked it. I liked the fact he was older, and it showed more of the intellect. A lot of times when we look at Batman, we see the physical aspect, the training, the younger, quicker Batman. And this year you had the older Batman using his intellect. He had to outsmart the younger, stronger person at the given time in a battle there. So I really enjoyed that. We got to see an aspect of Batman a lot of times. Well, they show partially, because we know Batman's extremely genius level intellect. We know that. Anyone who's into Batman, and even those people that are not into Batman, you know that about Batman. But even more so, when your physical abilities start to erode as you age, you have to outsmart, use your experience to beat the younger man. So I enjoyed it. I liked it. Back over to you, Sir Afflener.
Yeah, Dow, do you know if there's any talk about there being, I guess it's going to be, this is like what Dark Knight Returns Part 1. Is that what it's actually named?
Mm-hmm. You're going to get a Part 2 February, March-ish? Because they've already done some of the layouts for it. So
now, is that the one with Superman, where he has to fight Superman?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Well, that should be interesting. You know, he has to don this armor to fight, and he almost dies. I forgot how that ends, but it's a pretty brutal ending. But he survives it, if I'm not mistaken.
But again, the one thing DC has always gotten on point, all right? Again, I say always, we'll say 95% because, hell, this is the same studio that released Superman versus Brainiac, so, you know, that didn't really work. But their animated features are awesome. Their animated features are worthy of being released in theaters. We can all say that. I mean, there's been very few misses from DC when it comes to the animated. Yeah, it makes you wonder, why can't they get their animated guys to back behind their live-action movies to go like, all right, guys, seriously, this is your idea? This is going to suck on the screen. I could give you 10 reasons, but, yo, you know, there's a thing called the internet. Once somebody sees this in your live-action movie, there's going to be like a million people railing against you once we put this up. But you never get that from the animated features. The animated features get released. It's almost, like I said, 95% people out there love them. And it makes you wonder why no one there can think. And I know Captain's laughing back there, but why no one up there can think, hey, our animation side is doing this well. Can we get a couple of their writers to come over for a regular movie? We can't win, Afro Nerd. We can't win.
Well, you know, a couple of things that you had me think about. Wasn't there talk, I think we might even mention this on a show a while ago, wasn't there talk at least that the studio heads were considering bringing Bruce Timm and Paul Dini again to our listening audience? These are, you know, the figureheads of legendary modern DC Warner Brothers animation. These are the guys that had, you know, the Batman animated series and Superman, and then of course Justice League. I mean, they did it the right way. There was talk I heard that they were going to bring these guys in on trying to straighten out the live action thing. And one other thing I want to mention also, I mean, well, you know, listen, that's something that's wishful thinking, but I heard that through the grapevine. But also, this kind of reminds me of where DC does it right and Marvel does it wrong. It appears that DC has embraced the idea of making adaptations of their classic stories. You know, where you really can't go wrong, because you would want to see some of this stuff animated anyway. And Marvel seems to be reluctant. I think they did Planet Hulk or World War Hulk. They did it here and there. But they go off on tangents when Marvel does, when they decide to do animated works. But it seems like DC has embraced the idea of actually doing some of their iconic stuff. Now, when we mentioned Frank Miller, this is when I really was into, really got into comic books and really was in awe of them. I have to admit, through his work. His work with Daredevil, the Elektra stuff, why hasn't that been animated? I mean, there's a lot of iconic Marvel stories that would resonate that need, you know, instead of just going off and kind of creating these wacky stories, why don't they just interpret legendary storylines? That's something that DC gets right. Marvel doesn't seem to touch that the way DC is doing it. What's up with that?
Yeah. It's easy. Captain, what color is Disney interested in again? Go like, money.
Oh,
money, aspect, green. And here it is. They don't want to share it with the original creators. Disney's like, we could put new stories out there. The problem is now, every one of your new stories, Disney, has sucked. Ultimate Spider-Man, sucked. You know, Avengers as Brave Heroes, that's great. But when you mention when the series is 10 shows in, that, oh, you know what? We wanted more in tone with Ultimate Spider-Man, so this is going to do it for this. You actually have killed the series to the people that were watching it. So, you know, Disney, Marvel, thank you. Please, no more animated stuff with my properties. Please, please, you're killing me. You're absolutely killing me, you know. And I'll give this to DC, too, all right? Even though, DC, I'm still waiting for Judas Contract, you idiots. I'm loving how they're adapting and doing all of that. But again, you gotta put it in the prism. If you could get that right, and you have those writers doing this with a harder art form than animation, how can't you get some of them to at least consult when you're doing these movies? You know, a little foresight, a little thinking. But, hey, Cap, you know, it's Hollywood. They don't like to think.
All right, gentlemen, a quick transition, quick turnaround. Speaking of Hollywood and speaking of thinking, according to comicbookmovie.com, they have, a proposal about the six directors that they think, who they think should be considered for the Batman reboot. Now, we know Christopher Nolan is the Batman director of note for the last iteration, The Dark Knight Rises. We've talked about this before on the show. Just what direction should the character go after Nolan's super realistic and super serious version of it? I mean, I'm not comfortable with the campy version. It seems like the campy version just will not work. But some names have been thrown around. Rian Johnson, who is doing Looper right now, his name has been brought out there. Ben Affleck, his name has been attached to this thing. Darren Aronofsky, who I would like to see. So there's a number of names that have been put out there. Captain, what are your thoughts with, A, the direction that the reboot should go into, maybe even the timing factors? I mean, would you expect a reboot in 3 years, which might be too soon? The direction first, and who do you think would be a good director, or even the type of director to take the helm after Christopher Nolan's stellar work?
Okay, so we're in 2000, or let's talk about the direction first, and I'll tell you the time. Okay? It needs to be the detective Batman. The detective Batman. But I don't know if it's necessarily, you see, once you go older, how do you come back? That's the only problem with it. You see, that's the problem I'm having. How do you come back if you go older? We do want to see the older Batman. It would be nice. But once you go older now, how do you come back from that for a later reboot? How do you come back? What do? How do you write that up? Or are you just going to do as like Daryl says, just throw something on the board? You know? So it needs to be, I don't know if necessarily older, because older can be a problem. It can definitely be the detective Batman, where you see more of the detective aspect. That's what we need to see. We definitely need to see that. Now, the director I would love to see doing it is Doug Liman, the Bourne Identity director. I would love to see him do it. From the first one, I loved the way his fight scenes were. I thought they were incredible. And the whole way that movie went in, the camera angles and the way everything was done, I think he would be good. I don't know about the other guys. You could throw anybody else in second, third, fourth, and all other type stuff, but it would be good to see him. Now, the timing, to be real for the people, to give it a little time to say, it would have to be 2016-17, right about there, about 2017 probably, tell you the truth. That's reboot time. And then you start the whole process over again. That's all. Back over
Darryl,
to you, sir.
Darryl, what are your thoughts on the names that have been put out there?
One quick thing
I want to mention to the captain. I don't think there's really an issue with there being an older Batman. I think what they should do is even consider having just a separate story. Expand the Batman universe. Maybe even a Batman Beyond, where he's 40 years in the future, 50 years in the future, where it has a future almost Blade Runner landscape. And I've mentioned this before on air. And then still bring in a modern Batman for some other property. I don't see why you can't have two different versions coexisting as long as there's two different times. We know that this is a future take on Batman. Instead of just going into the same old kind of, same old meme, maybe they should mix it up a little bit. I'm just thinking.
Right,
Darryl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a thought.
I look at it this way. I'm along the same lines as Cap here, but I'm going with a different way. If I want my Detective Batman, I need it darker. I need it moody. I need my... When I say darker, I just mean it's going to be a serious tone, you know, him as a detective, bouncing ideas off Jim Gordon. I'll go with David Fincher from the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, you know, because that kind of moodiness with the landscapes and everything, that I need to see Batman or Bruce Wayne doing detective work around and trying to figure out a crime and the criminal and how to stop it. That's the type of tone I want. But me and Cap are in total agreement about the timeline for this. If you're getting a Batman movie before 2016, 2017, if they're pushing one out of 2015, 2014, that is rushing the franchise. That is way too soon. And see RoboCop last week for what we were talking about. Go like, I'm going in to see Batman. There's no Christian Bale. And you'll be hearing a whole bunch of that. 2016, 2017, that's just long enough to, okay, all right, Christian Bale's era is past. Nolan's era is past. Let's see what the new guy's got. Back to you, Afro.
Good. That's great.
Yeah, I have to go with the captain as far as the tone of the film. I'm not so sure if they're going to go with a darker Batman per se. I think Nolan had set the bar so high that if you do something that's going to – I don't know how you're going to be any darker than Nolan. That's going to be an issue because I'm thinking how Hollywood's going to – you know, you got to think dumb. The way Hollywood's going to approach this is we've got to be completely different than the last guy, which would not be the greatest move. I don't think it should be exactly the same, but I don't think it should be completely different. I think doing it in a Jason Bourne style, where it's more of an emphasis on action and on fighting and on detective work, where it's not so grotesquely dark, but you have a more physical Batman and a more detective style. But I think that if you see more, if you see him fighting like that, because we have yet to see Batman fight like that kind of energy. So if you put more energy involved and more energy thematically and visually, and also have him thinking, a true detective story, I think it would kick ass. I think not so dark, you know, dark, but not so dark, and not so much like Nolan, without going the way of a Schumacher. Don't do Schumacher. You do that, it's a wrap. So they've got to balance it a little bit differently than what Nolan did. Nolan really set the standard. So, and also, before we go to musical break, actually, there was talk that if there's ever going to be another appearance of Batman, it will probably be with the upcoming JLA movie. So if we see a Batman again, it will probably be his introduction in JLA. If that happens, that might mean that we might see him theoretically sooner than 2016, 2017, and then you get the reboot after his appearance in the JLA, which might not be a bad move. Might not be a bad move. All right, I'm hearing discussions in the chat room about a nerdcore rap artist by the name of Optimus Rhyme. I might have played this cut a few weeks ago, so let's revisit it. Going into a groove, folks, this is Cybernetic Circuits. Cybernetic Circuits by the great Optimus Rhyme. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
I am Vixen Tammin, it was on my payroll. I spent 20 G's on this vocab upgrade. Phytogenetical cybernetic tongue muscles are good for the flow and great for other things. Now I mean, human chips, heat to 50 gigs. Optimus, impossibly efficient, full of 1%. Thermodynamics designed by devious engineers. Every last one excels for guilt for stealing gears. Elaborate systems are probing space for them shows. Titanium lawyers by Mother Nature's move. Ho, ho, purple, hurdle in the head, and I'll pass bug killer. I found it in that patch, it made me iller. Pupils constrictive, you can see monocle irises. I hired an analysis to see what my virus is. What? It's not what I expected. Infected by the whacker called conspiracy, inhibiting, infected.
Ain't nothing left but these cybernetics. circuits to work with. I burst in binary code without rehearsing. I'm bursting permanent collisions for your operating system. You want me to stop? But what's the difference? Resistance is useless within this auto-beat monopoly, and you're another victim. We break in, spitting more than just phlegm. Taking everything hostage, no ransom. I'm logged on from net to .com, sliding through all your measures like I'm singing a song. Your firewall just got hit by a bomb. My soundscapes create earthquakes from Seattle to Cybertron. Just remain calm, there's no need for the static. See, these auto beats can beat you automatically. You're now a casualty of transforming situations. Forget complacence, because bomb is what you're facing.
I got 5 hard drives with 89 gigabytes.
I eat databases, networks, and websites.
I got bitches, viruses that devour these satellites.
Encryption, deciphering all that you read and write.
Ignite with 5 million horses under the hood.
Conscious artificial intelligence up to no good.
Maybe delivering doses that most is misunderstood.
If the Optimus, you wouldn't step to steal if you could.
I got 5 hard drives with 89 gigabytes.
I eat databases, networks, and websites.
I got these bitches, viruses that devour these satellites.
Encryption, deciphering all that you read and write.
Ignite with 5 million horses under the hood.
Conscious artificial intelligence up to no good.
Maybe delivering doses that most is misunderstood.
If the Optimus,
you wouldn't step to steal if you could.
Giving you the best of Nerdcore, that was Cybernetic Circuits by the great Optimus Rhyme. Optimus Rhyme. Gentlemen, we got about 8 minutes remaining, and actually we're going to have to kind of tie things up because we're going to have to move next door for our stellar interview with Mr. Andre Simone, the one of the founding members of the Revolution, Prince's outfit. So it should be a pretty interesting conversation talking about music, his past, his future, and the present. All right. Quickly, you know, I'm looking in the chat room, and I want to go in a quick direction. Our friend of the show, Q-Storm, he's talking about, you know, let's get off the Batman film, and let's start a letter-writing campaign for Black Panther. Now, there was – I've been giving comic book movie a lot of shine right now. I don't really like to do that, but comicbookmovie.com is an excellent resource. And they actually had an op-ed about – I believe it was a comic book movie. It might have been either that or Comics Alliance, one of those two sites. Darryl, you might remember this. They had something recently where a gentleman came up with his issues with the Black Panther film. No, we spoke about this before.
Alliance.
There mm-hmm. was comic, yeah, comics, comic book alliance, comic alliance, sorry, comic alliance, and they were talking about this. One gentleman was talking about, you know, the difficulties, the real world difficulties of putting together a Black Panther film, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that it would essentially be an all black cast. And I thought that approach was incorrect, that, yes, it's going to be in Africa partially. But if they were to follow the lead of why can't I forget, remember this gentleman's name? Darryl, the gentleman that brought back the Black Panther.
Christopher Priest?
Yeah, Christopher Priest. If they did the Christopher Priest story where essentially he comes to America, and they even have a Michael J. Fox analog. I mean, they actually drew his, what was his liaison? His American liaison, government liaison.
Everett Ross.
Right. Everett Ross looked a whole lot like Michael J. Fox. When I read that book, those books, it already put the cinematic thought in my head. It was very visual. It was very much American government and the Wakandan government. That within itself stops it from being a theoretically an all black movie. Don't you think, Darryl?
Yeah, and my problem is these days I don't want to hear the word can't. I don't want to hear the word impossible. Excuse me, Thor came out. Oh, just because there aren't gods in the audience, you know, we still made Thor. Oh, Batman came out. Well, not everybody is a multi-billionaire that puts on a costume out and goes out and fights crime. There's no such thing as can't anymore. It's a question of want to. All right? And this is where I get disappointed in places like BET and places like the One Network, all covered under the same umbrella and stuff like that, where you could have an urban crime-fighting thing. You know, you don't have to do it for much money. See Blade, the television series. You don't have to do it for much money. But you, if you get good actors in it, see Luther over on BBC America. If you get good actors into it, how, oh, we can't do it because there'll be too many black people. Cap, I know you thought you would. Oh, no, that dude did not just say that. And so by that logic, you know what? I shouldn't watch any of these white adventure movies because, oh, God, there's too many white people. We would have gotten hooked as kids on the kung fu cinemas because, oh, my God, there's too many Koreans. Oh, my God, there's too many Chinese. Oh, my God, there's too many Japanese.
Well,
after
Darryl,
I
quick,
read this,
well, Darryl,
I was
quick,
like, excuse me. Oh,
well,
sorry.
Because we only got about 4 minutes, unfortunately. Just quickly, I hear your pain. I hear your passion. But listen, the money people are going to talk that way. You know, I forgot the gentleman's name. The VP of Marvel was the one that came out with this nonchalant statement about, well, you know, it's going to be difficult to put this kind of film together.
No,
like what you just said, with you know, you're able to come up with an Asgard which doesn't even exist, and a technological Africa should not be that difficult to do. But he was trying to be coy or be politically correct without having to outwardly say. Having an all-black cast and selling it. You can sell an all-black cast if it goes with the stereotype. Having a technological Africa, black folks in power, you know, this whole black world, as far as trying to sell that to Hollywood, so he thinks. That's a difficult thing. That's what he's thinking. All that stuff you talked about, white fantasy does very well. Putting white people in fantastic positions, anything. Does very well. Black folks in the same situation, not so well. That's the thought process. Not that it should be that way. That's the thought process that we're fighting against. Captain, I got to give you the last word before we move next door for Mr. Simone.
Well, Wakanda would have to be all black. That's definitely. That's not a problem. Of course, Black Panther, the character, he is black. But his interaction on the screen does not have to be totally all black cast. You can make it essentially where the white other superhero comes to Black Panther for help, and then he has his people who are more or less white, you know, and then there you go. But there you go. You do have white faces in there. We've seen Blade. Blade definitely works. There wasn't all black cast. Blade was just the only really star that was black, you know, in all those other movies and everything else. This would just be more black, so to speak. But you put white characters in there, and they interact with Black Panther. That's all. That's how you do it.
Well, there's a will, there's a way. Listen, gentlemen, we got to get on up out of here. Dow, as always, your efforts and your opinions are definitely appreciated and needed. It's been real. We got to do it again this week, folks. All right, once again, we're getting out of here. Captain, be prepared. We got to go next door to meet Mr. Simone, the great, iconic, legendary bassist. The man's going to do his damn thing. Coming up in a few moments. We're going next door, folks. It's been an absolute pleasure. Check us out.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
We'll be right back.
Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously, you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of minds. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to yet another fiery and undoubtedly funky edition of Afro Nerd Radio featuring Captain Kirk. Listen, folks, we have a stellar show, a star-spangled show, so to speak. We're expecting iconic bassist, songwriter, and record producer Andre Simone to come through. Listen, folks, this is an icon, a legend. We have to give him his due. Before we get into the discourse, let's get into one of his grooves, something that I've definitely appreciated. This is the Dance Electric. We'll listen to a sculpture of this, and then we will have a discussion with Mr. Simone himself. Let's groove.
Go.
Okay, folks, we're back once again. That was Mr. Andre Simone, one of his classics, The Dance Electric, The Dance Electric. The call-in number, folks, by the way, is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. And I could not do this show or any show effectively without the assistance of Captain Kirk. Captain, you are certainly needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Just in time. The time is in effect. No pun intended.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to certainly enjoy this interview, ladies and gentlemen, because, first of all, I have a great appreciation for Mr. Simone's musicality, his musical ability. And he, you know, listen, we're talking about history here. Definitely one of the main architects as to what is commonly known as the Minneapolis Sound. So I definitely want to speak with him for the historical record, but also because he is still very much alive and with us, still doing music. Actually, we had a song that we played a little while ago. He has a new single called America that is created for President Barack Obama. So I want him to talk about that. So he's definitely a legend, iconic bassist, and I'd say something even to note. Folks know that we have a real issue with today's music, and this gentleman is a true musician. So he is to be respected. We have to really get into what happened to the music. What happened to the music? This man is one of the greatest bassists the world has ever known, and yet, you know, we're listening to Kanye West today. Well, okay. Let me not go off the rails, Captain.
Hold your thoughts.
I think we might actually have a visitor. I think. I'm going that way.
Hello?
Mr. Simone?
Yes.
Welcome to Afternoon Radio.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I like that.
Yes, sir.
You deserve it.
I like that.
Listen.
Oh, thanks.
Listen, sir, you are to be respected, definitely one of my musical idols, so it's appreciative that you came on our show. We really appreciate it. And I tell you, first up, something that your name comes up quite a bit on the Internet, because mm-hmm. a lot of people who are very much into the Minneapolis sound, those who are into instrumentation, you know, whether it's Stanley Clark or Larry Graham, then your name comes up as one of the bassists that really was able to throw down. So mm-hmm. I'm glad you came on. And I guess the first question really is, what prompted your hiatus and what prompted you to return?
My hiatus, you know, more than anything, it's just I kind of got a little bit bored with music, you know, and I like the idea of being behind the scenes a little more than being up front. And, you know, I think Prince did a really good job. He had it, you know, he was dropping some serious music down. And it's like, you know what, he can hold this down for a minute. I'm going to go do some other stuff and help some other people out. And, you know, I mean, I did my thing. And I'm a very firm believer in, you know, in being there when it's your time. And right then it felt like it was other people's time, and it was good for me to help other people do what they had to do.
And what's new with you now? Like, you're coming back into the fold. What's that like?
Well, you know, I heard a little bit about what you were talking about when you were talking about the state of music right now. And that's kind of where I'm at. It's just, you know, I mean, I'm a real musician, and you're right about that. You know, I mean, I take what I do really, really serious. And, you know, part of the other reason for my hiatus is I couldn't get along with record company people who didn't like the idea of me being able to do the kind of music I wanted. Because I wanted to do rock and roll back then. And they were like, well, listen, you know, we signed you because I got signed to the R&B label, which is fine. But they wouldn't allow me to, you know, express myself. You know, and I just, you know, I would always say things like, look, rock and roll is music that was created, you know, by black musicians. And so it'd be like if you, you know, walked out of your house and you walked to the store and you came back and there was somebody else in your house. And would you just move out and say, oh, they came in my house, I'm a leave now? No. You come and you kick them out of your house. Basically, that's kind of what I think about rock and roll. And so, I mean, I just feel like nobody was really representing that right now. And it just, it's something that, I mean, it's an unbelievable, you know, force in music. And it's something that I love. I mean, I've always loved rock and roll. So I just thought, you know what? I think there's a place for me, and I think there's some people that really, really would understand where I'm coming from. And I think he's feeling where I'm coming from. So I'm going to see if I can do this. And, it's good to get some support.
Well, you definitely have support from us over here. Actually, my partner wants to ask you a question. Captain,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Simone.
Yo.
How's it going, sir? How's it going?
It's going great. It's going good.
All right. That's good. That's good. Tremendous over here on this side. I'm just going to jump right into it. See, we feel here. I'm pretty sure Afro Nerd feels, I'm saying we, speaking French, Afro Nerd feels the same way. A lot of the current artists, they just suck. And from the record executive standpoint, it's a total money grab. It was always a money grab, because that's why they're record executives, of course. They want to make money from the music. But it turned into more so a money grab. And what happened to the music? What happened? How did we get to the point where it's like this?
I can kind of break it down. Here's the thing, because I, you know, I experienced it, and, you know, and I'm one of those kind of people, man, that I'm like, look, you know what? I'm not going to play this game. I'll just go do my own thing. And part of it is you get record labels and record company people who are really not music fans. Some of them are, you know, to their credit, but a lot of them are just people who are not, you know, they don't have the best interest of the music at heart. It's just all about trying to make some money and capitalize on some, you know, momentary, you know, sound or some momentary thing, you know, flavor of the month kind of thing. And, you know, so you got a lot of that. And it's like, you know, and I had literally people, you know, in there talking about, I don't know if I like that because the snare drum isn't the same snare drum that's on this song, or it doesn't have the same kind of kick pattern that's, you know, I'm a musician. It's like, and I, you know, I'm like, look, listen, you know, you pick up a guitar, pick up a bass, and then we can talk about something. You know, but, you know, you start having people like that trying to tell people like me. I mean, when I was a kid, 4 or 5 years old, I'd be riding around my neighborhood on my bike with my guitar on my way to one of my girlfriend's house playing my guitar, you know, just practicing. I'd be sitting in front of the TV practicing, always practicing. I mean, I took it serious, and when somebody stepped up talking about they wanted to, you know, play, I'd say, you know, well, let's play. You know, and everything would always be, let's take it to the stage. And, you know, when it came, I mean, I would walk up on stages and tell people, you know, that were playing, man, y'all ain't no good. Y'all, come on, y'all, you know, and they'd say, why don't you come up here and play? And then me and the fellas would be like, I was waiting for you to ask. Then we'd jump up, and then we'd do whatever we had to do. But, you know, that's the climate I came up in.
Well, I tell you something. This is one of the reasons why we developed Afro Nerd Radio, and there's a reason why we call it Afro Nerd, because there's this perception that black folks aren't articulate and that we're all clowning and gangbanging and the whole thing. So there has to be another vision for black and brown folks to express themselves. So I like you. I noticed that for some reason it seemed to be R&B and rap. And nothing else. As a matter of fact, R&B isn't even what it used to be. It's
no,
just
no.
Rap music. And I said, this seems to be unfair on some level. So on this show, we emphasize urban alternative, meaning just like Kurt Cobain was the alternative to hair bands in the 80s, why don't we have an alternative for what is being fed to us now? We have Afropunk. We have black rock musicians. There are people out here who are picking up guitars, doing instrumentation, doing arranging, but it seems like everyone seems to be comfortable with this rap is all that we can do, and that must stop at some level.
That's got to stop. You know, and I think part of it is that I think, unfortunately, what a lot of artists, the mistake that they make is they approach it from the wrong perspective. They approach rock and roll like they're approaching somebody else's, you know, form of art. You know, it's like they don't take ownership of it, you know, like they take ownership of rap. You know, now just because rap is the newest, one of the newest forms that, you know, black artists have created, you know, it's you got to take ownership of your art, whatever that, even if you didn't create it, you know, whatever it is, you got to own it. And if you don't own it, and that's what I think, unfortunately, a lot of, you know, artists that, you know, that get into the black rock arena, they don't understand. You got to embrace it. You got to embody it. You know, I mean, rock and roll is cocky. Music, really, for the most part, is cocky. You can't tiptoe on it, up on it, and think that you're going to make some noise. You got to just step up and say, "Look, I'm here, and we're doing this. Now, come on, let's go." You know, it's got to be like that. Otherwise, it doesn't ring true. You know, you get people who come on and they can second guess it, and then they plant seeds of doubt, and then you doubt it yourself. You got to live it, and I think that's part of, you know, why you don't get that, you know, the strong, you know, attitude going towards that.
Now, with you coming back into the fold, you have a new single called America. Explain that to us a little bit. I'm going to play it in a few moments, but you have America, and it's connected with Barack Obama. Explain that whole process to our audience.
Well, you know, part of it is, you know, I've been pretty disappointed with the level of support, you know, that the music community hasn't really been giving, in my opinion, to Barack Obama. You know, and I just thought, you know, I mean, I'm not the most famous person, you know, a household name or anything like that, but, you know, to me, the election is the most important election of our lifetime, you know, and it could come down to like 1,000 votes or so. So, you know, I think that if I can get everybody or anybody listening to donate, to vote, that I'm doing my part. And when I came up with this song, I was working on my album, you know, and because I'd already thought, you know, I music is at a point where, you know, somebody's got to step in and just, you know, plant a new flag, because it's just, you know, where it's going right now is just not good. And so, you know, I mean, I came with this song and I thought this would be a great song, you know, to, you know, for the Obama campaign, you know. And I thought, well, I'm just going to, you know, put it out there and donate the proceeds, you know, and hopefully get people even, you know, even if it's a, you know, whoever I can get to hear where I'm coming from, to understand that this is how important this election is, you know. And, you know, basically that's kind of how that came about. There's actually a couple of songs, because a lot of the songs on my record are pretty, issue-oriented, you know, because I'm obviously been really, really tuned to the politics, you know, what's going on in our world, especially from an American standpoint. So that's basically how this song came about.
Well, without further ado, let's give you your due and the audience. I want to play America for So let's play America, and when we get back, I have a few more questions for you. Again, to our listening audience, we're speaking to iconic bassist, and one of the, I would dare say, one of the architects of the Minneapolis sound. This is America. Mr. Simone, if you can put you on hold for a few moments, we'll be right back. Let's groove to America. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
All right. A game that's Mr. Simone himself, America. Why does Lil Wayne still have a job? Explain to why. Why is Kanye
what?
In business? So why is after hearing that, why is Kanye and Lil Wayne? Why are they even called musicians? I'm gonna throw some hate out there. Why are they called musicians? And I think that's what bothers me, is that I play a little bit of drums myself. To learn to play an instrument is not an easy thing. We're hearing people who are called producers, but they're really beat makers. They're not arrangers. They're not really throwing down musically, but they're called musicians. Isn't that within itself a problem?
You know, my thing, you know, I don't want to hate on anybody. It's like, I think...
I'll do it for you.
Yeah, you do it for me. What I will say is I think record companies have created a climate to make that kind of, to make that kind of the norm. You know, because, you know, musician, there should be a separate category. But, you know, I'm not here to whine or complain. It's like, hey, you know what? Let everybody do their thing. But I'll tell you this. I'm going to do my thing. And, you know, and I'm going to step up. And I just want, you know, as long as I can get some support and some love, you know, hopefully we can turn some of this around a little bit. Yeah, because I definitely want to plant a flag. You know, the other thing I just want to point out that, you know, I don't want to be too, but I think it's really important for me. I really want to get people to donate for this. Because obviously, you know, this is what I'm doing this for. You know, this particular song is really, you know, I really believe in Barack Obama and the direction that he's taken his country. You know, and I think that, you know, he's basically, you know, the best shot. Is, like I said, it's a really important election, you know, and to help secure our future and to give us a better shot, you know, for people like you, me, and, you know, really anybody listening, the best shot at this American dream. We got to get involved. And, you know, people have to, you know, you got to get involved. You got to let your voice be heard. You got to donate. Okay, if it's $1, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. But, you know, the other thing I would say, and I don't mean to plug my whole thing so much because that's not a big deal, but I just really want people to get involved in this and donate. There's a, you know, a kind of a deadline for tonight. It's like the biggest sort of, you know, campaign fundraising. You know, the deadline is tonight in order to stay, you know, try to stay ahead of what the other side is doing. So I really want everybody out there to really know. I mean, as far as the song is concerned, I think you guys have it on your website. It's andresimone.bandcamp.com. The song is America. And one of the other things that I'm doing is, obviously, I want everybody to know all the proceeds go to the real Obama reelection campaign. And one of the other things I'm going to be doing is giving people an exclusive link to preview selected songs from my upcoming CD. So, you know, I want to let everybody know that. But, no, I mean, as far as musicians, that is an interesting thing. I mean, I heard you guys talking a little bit before, you know, before we started talking. And, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, learning how to play instruments, that's not an easy thing. You know, and it's like, I mean, it's, for me, it's always been a source of pride, something I take extremely serious. I mean, I always have. You know, I mean, so serious that that's a part of the reason why I just stepped out of the game. Because if I can't do it the way I want to, then I'd really rather not do it at all. But I just think that right now, you know, with the internet, with, you know, with Twitter and all kinds of other, you know, outlets that we have now, you know, people like me can really do what we need to do. And people like you, you know, with the support of where you guys are coming from and helping people like myself, you know, reach people, I think we can start to reshape, you know, change the dialogue, you know, maybe get a whole new normal going, you know, where, you know, it really becomes about music again. And, you know, one other thing I'd like to say is as far as, you know, how come there's not, you know, why, you know, people like Lil Wayne or Kanye, and nothing against all of them, because I got to say, some of Kanye's stuff I love, man. I ain't going to lie. You know, but you're right, it's a different kind of medium. But what they did, and I think it was very calculated, is they cut out programs like, you know, after-school programs, music programs, things like that. I mean, those are things that, you know, like myself or Prince, I mean, because we grew up together, man, in Minneapolis. Those are things that without those programs, there wouldn't be no Andre Simone or no Prince or no, you know, Morris Day, Jimmy Jam, and Terry Lewis, all that stuff that came from Minneapolis. You know, I know that for a fact because I was obviously there. I mean, that's how we met. That's how we got involved. There was outlets for us to be able to do gigs, you know, and things like that to keep us, you know, knuckleheads like myself off the street, you know, and keep us focused on something other than, you know, all the other things. And I think,
you know, now you don't have that so much. So, you know, people get involved in other things, and then it becomes an easy road, you know, because, I mean, you know, getting involved in, you know, in music now is, you know, as long as you got, like, some attitude and you can string together a few words, you know, you can be a superstar. You can be a rap superstar. You know, it doesn't matter what you look like. You know, it's just, you know, all about attitude. And if you can, you know, get somebody, you know, particularly a record company, to think that you got enough, you know, hood credibility to be able to, you know, get people to listen to you, to, you know, make your you know, with enough conviction and attitude to make people go, oh, he's somebody I should listen to. You know, as opposed to, you know, back in the day where you had to actually learn, you had to get people out to the shows, and you had to blow them away like that. I mean, I, you know, when we started in the whole Prince thing, it's interesting. It was really interesting to see, you know, because we had to open for Rick James and some of the other people that, you know, we opened for. It was interesting to see, watch people who hated us when we first stepped on stage. But by about the third song, you know, because the first song is like, you know, people are like, oh, you know, calling us names and yelling and, you know, get off and all that other kind of stuff. But by about the third song, you know, all of a sudden people who was yelling was like, all of a sudden they were starting to bob their head. By about the fourth song, they was in it, and it was a done deal. So it's interesting. I know how you can go from, you know, people being totally into one thing, and if you come with the conviction and the attitude and back it up, you know, from a musician standpoint with the musicianship, you can win. You can win those people over, and you can take them in another direction. That's what I want to try to do with this record. That's what I'd love to do with this song, if I can get people behind it. And thanks to you for supporting it. You know, we're on our way.
No problem with that. Something I was going to mention also. You kind of hinted at this. You here for the historical record, and I think people really need to know how the Minneapolis Sound was created. And how you were a integral part of that creation. Now, we know that you literally grew up with Prince, with Mr. Nelson. What how did that come about? I mean, you guys go way back. What was that like? I mean, I think even so much where he was in your home.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, I grew up in the projects. I grew up like, you know, in basically Knucklehead Central. But my mom, you know, she, you know, went back to school, got an education, you know, was able to move us out, you know, of that situation, put us in an upper middle class neighborhood, you know, which was great, interesting for me because, you know, it's like I was like a fish out of water because I was like went from, you know, basically survival mode into this, you know, sort of whole nother reality, which is like, wow. Things, you know, that, you know, I wanted to have that didn't belong to me seemed really easy. So, but then I realized, you know, I had to make some friends and new school and all that kind of stuff. And so what I did, you know, was, you know, I remember vividly just being in gym class and they called my name and I was like, okay, you know, and I looked, you know, said, no, go stand against the wall. And I remember looking at along the wall of all these people, and I didn't know anybody, and I looked, and I saw this one kid, and I thought, he looks interesting. Let me go stand next to him. So I went and stood next to him. We started talking. You know, I said, yeah, I do music. I said, what do you do? He said, oh, I do music, too. I said, what you play? He said, I play piano and guitar. I said, oh, okay, I play bass and horn and stuff like that and drums. He said, you know, we should jam. I was like, oh, cool, let's jam. So my dad's little partner, let's go over there and hang out. Let's go jam. You know, went over there. Started jamming, you know, and I happened to look on his piano because, you know, he was playing like Batman and Man from Uncle, and I was like, dude is good. I was like, oh, okay, we should start a band. It's like, cool. You know, I looked on the piano and I said, man, that guy playing, who is that? He said, oh, that's my dad and his band back in the day or something like that. I said, if I didn't know better, I think that was my dad, you know. Then his dad comes walking in and he's like, you know, dad, you know, this is Andre, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, introduces us. And I asked him, I said, hey, who's that right there? And he looked at the picture, and he looked at me, he said, oh, my God. And I was like, what? He said, man, you're Fred, son, ain't you? And I was like, yeah. He said, oh. He said, man, your dad and I were in a band for years. And it turns out it was a total coincidence. He said, man, you boys used to play together when you were little. And he went, and I was like, wow. And so that's kind of how we started. But then, you know, like I said, because I was like a fish out of water, and I hadn't really, gotten all of that out of my system. I pulled up to Prince's mom's house in a brand new Cadillac. I think I was like 14 or something like that. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, can he come out and play? And she was like, whose car is that? And I was like, uh-oh. And so from then on, she said, he can't hang out. You can't hang out with him no more. And so he ran away and came in and lived with us. And then my mom adopted him and lived in our house for years. And that's basically how that started. And through then, we put the band together, Grand Central, did, talent shows and Battle of the Bands. And, that's kind of how it started.
And I tell you, this history is important for our listening audience. Again, folks, we're talking to Mr. Andre Simone. What you're saying, and I don't want to give the impression that I hate hip-hop, because we do play hip-hop, but we do play a certain type. We do play progressive hip-hop, not so much the commercial end of it. And I think it's important to have different lanes for people of color, so the world knows that we're not just on one note, that we're doing all this other stuff. That you could have a certain type of hip-hop, but you need to have your black rock, your Afro-punk, your acid jazz. All that needs to be put out there so people know, wow, these are multifaceted folk. We're not just doing the rap thing. So I don't want to give the impression, because I listen to hip-hop too, but I guess I'm sick of the type that the one note that we're constantly hearing commercially. That's a problem for me. So I appreciate I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, if you think about it, like, I know when I was growing up, you had so much, diversity. You obviously you had everything from Hendrix to Sly and the Family Stone to Earth, Wind and Fire to Tower of Power. I mean, to Santana, and and there was to Doobie Brothers. I mean, there was blacks in all of those groups. It was just total diversity. It was not, relegated to one little old form of a representation. I mean, I would be disappointed if I was, if I was a kid and that was my selection. It's like, oh man, come on. Because, it just gets boring. Nothing against that. Cause creativity is creativity, but I just think that, I just can't be that one dimensional where it's just, oh, that's it. It's just, I'm just relegated to this little bit over here. I can't do that. The world is too big. My mind is too big. My curiosity is too big, and I would hope that everybody else is as well. Because we're in this world, and now it's a global community. We are now a human family, whether we want to admit it or not. Because you got people that can, you can reach from here to Australia or wherever. Borneo. Wherever there's an internet connection, you can get to those people. You can say whatever you want. And, like you said, I hate to think that what we say, as black people is just this one-dimensional little old thing, that's all you get. That's all you hear from us, and that's all we're known for. I just wouldn't want to go out like that.
One of the focal questions coming from our chat room is regarding a tour. With this, with this new upcoming album and with America, are you planning to tour?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to try to get on as many tours and as many of those festival things as I possibly can. No, this is, hopefully if I can do what I want to do, I want to try to reset the whole situation, because the record I'm working on is a rock and roll record, and it's definitely, coming from a different place. And I just want to really just change the dialogue if I can. I'm not trying to act like I'm some sort of, anything. But, the one thing that, I will say is I've always been a very serious, person when it comes to music. And I take what I do really serious. And I'm a kind of a take-no-prisoners kind of musician. It's like, look, hey, this is what I do. And, you pay the cost, to talk the kind of stuff I, always talk. When I was in, in the band with Prince, back in the day, it's like, anybody who knew anything about me knew that, Andre doesn't play. When he steps on stage, he's going on stage to rip somebody a new one, period. And that's still the same way now. It's like when I get on stage to perform, it's like, if you're coming behind me, you better be coming with something. Because I'm stepping up there to try to, you know, rip the head off, and that's it. You know, and it's like if I don't do that, then I'm done. You know,
and it's funny you said you mentioned some of the bands that, you know, I'm thinking right before this interview of how when I was growing up, I was so accustomed to the concept of a band. You know, you had the Ohio Players. You had the Revolution.
Right.
You know, you had Earth, Wind, and Fire. It was you had all these bands where it was very much accepted. Now, I can only think of a few black bands. Not that I solely listen. I listen to all kinds of music, but it would be nice to see that returned, the actual musicality, where we see live instrumentation and people really grooving. So what you said is very important. I hope we do see a return of that, because what's happening now, it seems like it's just stale. We need something else.
Yeah, well, that's exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I think that, you know, somebody like me is in a perfect position to do that. I mean, the thing is that nowadays, obviously, it's different because, you know, to sort of, you know, get the attention, you know, of the public, you know, you have to persevere. You have to just, you know, do whatever you can to try to get people's ear. You have to do, you know, you have to perform. You have to do all the channels. We just shot a video yesterday. You know, you got to do everything you got to do. And I'm there. I'm just, you know, that's where I'm at right now. And I want to do everything I possibly can to make this, to do what I can do to change the dialogue in music right now, because it needs it. It's, you know, I think you know, it's a perfect time right now, you know, for somebody like me to come and do what I'm trying to do, because I think there's an opening, you know, where you're right. You know, people are starving for something. They're hungry for something. They don't know what it is. And hopefully I can, you know, I can be that answer, hopefully, you know. And, you know, I mean, you know, I put a band together. I mean, the band is really, really, the band, I have to say, I was lucky to get some of the people that I got. I mean, really talented musicians. The guitar player is out, plays with John Legend usually. Bass player is out with Macy Gray. The drummer is out with Madonna. Or no, the keyboard player is out with Madonna. You know, just a lot of people. I've just been very fortunate to, you know, to really have been able to pull these guys together. And really, you know, because we're doing it all independent, they basically are doing it all for basically nothing, little or nothing. You know, just on the strength of just, you know, loving the music and understanding, you know, where I'm trying to go, and they just totally got into it. And it just, I mean, yeah. So
has there been any discussion? I have to ask this from a fan's perspective. Mm-hmm. Has there been any discussion with bringing the entire Minneapolis crew together for some kind of touring vehicle? You know, whether it's Prince, yourself, Jimmy Jam, and Terry Lewis. I mean, Jerome, that whole crew. Bringing back Grand Central in a way to the audiences. Has there ever been discussed against all you cats coming in and just throw down?
You know, I think there could be at some point, you know. I mean, but I have to say, you know, I mean, what I'm doing right now is just me. You know, I honestly have never really been into the, you know, getting lumped with the whole Minneapolis sound thing, even though obviously I was a very, very integral part of that sound. And, you know, I mean, that's no doubt. That just is what it is, you know. But, you know, but I just, you know, to be lumped in to everybody, and I got mad respect for all of them. I love the time. Obviously, Morris Day is, you know, I mean, you know, I'm the one who brought him into our thing, you know, into the band in the first place. You know, I love the time. I love Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. You know, I love the family. You know, I love, obviously, Prince. You know, from what I hear, he gave me a shout out the other night in Chicago, and I really appreciate that. You know, I mean, I got love for everybody, but right now I'm just trying to do my thing right now and focus on that. And if I can do my thing and get just, you know, the focus on that for a minute, because I'm really, you know, everybody's doing their thing, but what I'm doing is something different. I'm not doing what those guys are doing. So I'm just trying to focus on this and make, this is like almost rewriting the whole script right now. What I'm trying to do, this is a total different thing. And once I do that, and if I can get that established, then absolutely I'd love to bring everybody together. Because, you know, to try to get people together right now, everybody's on their whole thing. You know, everybody's this person and they've done that, and, you know, and it's their history, and this person and they've done that and their history and all of that. See, I've never been that kind of person. I'm the kind of person that, look, you guys, let's just do this. We did this before. We used to. This is how we did it back in the day. Let's do this now. But now everybody's got this whole other thing. And see, I'm the only person that could probably do something like that who doesn't have the ego, you know, because I don't care, you know, who doesn't have the ego to just say, let's do this, you know, because it takes somebody like that to bring something like that together. I did it already last summer. You know, my sister, my part of my family, they basically run the Urban League, you know, in Minneapolis. I shouldn't say run it, but, you know, they're very heavily involved in the Urban League, and they asked me to come and perform, you know, for their family day celebration because, you know, there was a whole bunch of stuff that happened. There was a tornado. The community got kind of damaged pretty bad. My sister, you know, did like she used to do back in the day. Listen, you're going to come and play. You're going to come. You're gonna, you know, I know you're working on your record, but you're going to come down here and you're going to play, and that's just the way that is. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to play my record because I'm not done with it yet. And so what I'll do is I went and I got as many of the original band members. I'm talking about the original
band Bobby members Z that was I, there, could, I think.
Yeah, Bobby Z was there. I got Matt Fink. Those are the original band members from the Prince band. But I also got Charles Smith, who's Prince's cousin, who was in the original band. I got William Dowdy, who was our original percussionist from our original band. And we threw down. We just played some old school, some, you know, some Fly in the Family Stone, some Funkadelic, Bob Marley. We had a blast. So, you know, I'm hoping that it almost happened this summer, you know, because, you know, there was some interest in pulling something like that together. So hopefully next summer we can pull something like that off, I hope.
Okay, that sounds terrific. That's very good.
Yeah.
I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I'm getting calls from our peanut gallery in the channel. two things. One, you mentioned Rick James, and you also Rick James. First of all, his passing was tragic. Another funkster that just I don't know. You know, that's about some. That's the nasty part of the record business. Not everybody survives it. But was there any real tension between his band and your band? What was up with that?
Yeah.
Was that just common?
I mean,
that's just common, you know.
You know, no, it was. You know, here's the thing, because it was the first time we were on a tour like that. You know, and so, you know, I think, you know, and I think a lot of it had to do with me. You know, because like I said, I'm one of those kind of people that no matter what my situation, I want to win. You know, I want to be the baddest person on stage. And so, you know, when I go on stage, it's just about trying to rip somebody a new one. So we would go out there every night, you know, with this attitude, you know, because, I mean, you know, he wasn't in our shoes. We were going out there and literally audience after audience was booing us for the first two or three songs until they started realizing that, oh, these dudes are serious. You know, and then it would turn from boo to like yay, and then, you know, then it was like, you know, then it was storming, and then it was like, you know, we get, you know, mobbed and the whole everything. I mean, it's just a whole nother reality after that. And once it caught on, then it was crazy. But, you know, I think they thought, you know, we were, you know, being too cocky, and we'd come off stage and we just, you know, would go right straight to our dressing rooms, you know, and it wasn't a whole lot of chatter or talk. It's just very serious and very focused. And they took that as sort of, you know, snubbing. And then there was a little incident in Buffalo in Rick James' hometown where, you know, they blamed me for it, which it wasn't my fault. But, you know, I draw a little bit, and I drew on the chalkboard, you know, a picture of Howdy Doody. I think it was like Saturday Night Live, one of them shows did some skit on Howdy Doody. So I drew a Howdy Doody sketch and something like that, and, you know, it was just clowning around. But when we left, I think the roadies or something put braids on it and squirted a whole bunch of perfume on it and wrote Rick James.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God.
And then they thought, and then I think because, you know, it was his hometown. He had the mayor and his mom and everybody else. They came in our dressing room because we left. And they went in, and then they saw that. And then, you know, then they confronted, because I guess they said, Andre drew it. So they confronted me, and I said, I didn't draw it unless you think he looks like, you know, Howdy Doody. You know, I didn't put braids on it. I didn't put, you know. And so that became an issue. And then for a while, it was, you know, I tried to come there with, you know, some of the girls that I was with to go to some after party, and they was like, you can't come in. And I was like, what you mean I can't come in? You know, so we went back and forth, and it's like, you know, then we had to have a sit-down meeting where we sat down, and then they said basically y'all been kind of cocky because you come off stage, you don't want to speak, and it went into that whole thing. But we, you know, we ironed it out, and in the end, we wound up being really, really cool. And I got to say, man, Rick James is an unbelievable, just, you know, I can't say enough about how extraordinary a talent that brother was and what, you know, what he brought. You know, I mean, he's another person who, you know, look at what he, I mean, Punk Funk was a whole, there was nobody doing what he was doing. He was a groundbreaker. You know, so I had nothing but respect for him. And it was a great, you know, it was a great opportunity for us, definitely a great opportunity for me.
Now, and we're talking about the acceptance of black rock musicianship. Mm-hmm. What about the infamous Rolling Stone thing? Like, you were an opening act for the Stones, and I love the Stones. But was there a little bit of apprehension? You think there might have been a little racial aspect with you guys coming in as a fronting band for their show? That was like an infamous thing. Cause it's hard to accept that the Revolution would be booed, but before a Stone concert, I heard that it was, you know, that was a little rough too.
Well, a couple of things. One thing, I was gone by then. In fact, I was not in the band. I was probably gone about a month or two before that happened. You know, a lot of people said if Andre would have been there, you would have got booed. They would have got booed just as you know. I mean, the only thing is, I would have threw stuff back, so probably would have got others. But you know, because you know, like I said, but you know, I mean. You know, I can understand that because, you know, you know, for an audience like that and for where Prince was coming from at the time, you know, you got to think about that. Had I been involved, I would have said, you know, hey, you know, we might want to approach this one a little bit different than we've been approaching some of the other ones because people might think we're treading a little bit on their whole thing. So let's go to, you know, because we had different modes we would go in back in those days. Let's do this mode, you know, let's do the more, you know, funk rock or funk this or, you know, more rock and roll or more, you know, I mean, it's just a frame of mind that you got to get into for different audiences. That would have been an audience where we might have wanted to go in a, you know, you can't come out there doing a Mick Jagger thing, you know, right in front of a Mick Jagger crowd like that because, you know, you got to think, you know, he's like, you got some of the, you know, some of the Hell's Angels still, especially at that point, are still in the audience and, you know, that mentality. You got to think about that kind of thing, you know, whereas, you know, after you win them over, after a couple of songs, and you want to go into that, okay, but just coming straight out, you know, it's like, you know, people can look at that and go, oh, he's trying to be this, and they can misunderstand that, and then you could wind up with problems.
One last question, because I know your time is valuable. Mm-hmm. One thing that I'm thinking of with your credentials is that you're also a phenomenal producer. Do you foresee yourself going back into that end of things as well? I mean, you know, you produce a lot of acts that so many people may not remember or be familiar with that you produce them. But you know, you have a knack for that. Obviously, do you think you might go back into that as well?
You know. I mean, I'm definitely going to do, you know, produce other artists. But, you know, what I found because, you know, producing artists is an interesting thing, you know, because everybody wants to be creative. Everybody wants to get their, you know, they see their own vision for what they want to do, which is, that's also part of the reason why I decided to do my own thing because, you know, I you know, work with a lot of different people, you know, and, you know, I have a vision for where I see some people going. But that's just my vision. You know, they have a different vision. You know, I always think go for the throat, you know. Go for what people wouldn't expect, you know, but you gotta own it. And, you know, some people shy away from that kind of thing. You know, they don't share that attitude. And so it just gets a little bit, you know, it's a little bit hard for me to, you know, bang my head against the wall trying to get people to do the things that I think they should do. Like, you know, I had an artist that I was, you know, that I was working on, you know, I thought she should have, you know, just gone at this really crazy wild rock thing. You know, she wanted to go at this sort of safe kind of R&B kind of thing, you know? And so, you know, you get a lot of that. And then it's just like, you know, I mean, I'll do it, you know, but it's like, you know, you're just putting yourself in a category with a million other people, you know, whereas you set yourself outside of all of that and do something different. So, I mean, that's part of why I'm a little reluctant to jump back into that. What I am going to get involved in is filmmaking, because I write screenplays and was fortunate to be able to learn how to, you know, write and produce and direct and do that whole thing. So I want to get into filmmaking. But right now I'm just focused on, you know, doing this record, doing a tour, doing a couple more records, you know, and trying to get, you know, get some people to get behind me and get behind this movement, you know, and just make some noise and get music back on, you know, on a different trajectory. That's my focus right now.
Well, certainly you are to be respected. I loved your music and will continue playing it and listening to it. I look forward to the upcoming album. We're definitely looking out for that. We'll try to keep in touch behind the scenes because we will play your records. And I think the time is now, as you just stated. One of the reasons why we came up with this whole thing is we're trying to highlight black rock, or just rock in general, but I have to emphasize the black rock thing because, like you said earlier, it is actually part of our history, our tradition. And I hear it all the time. Matter of fact, last week we had a young lady on. She's a journalist. Her name is Lena Dawes from Ms. Lena Dawes, and she's into the heavy metal thing as a black female.
Okay.
And you know, she's going to come on. She was so popular. She's coming in next Wednesday to do a part two of our discussion. But the whole thing was, there are folks out here that are really willing to play and listen to people of color do something besides the rap thing. So the market is there. So we're trying to push this agenda. So we will help you. We will assist you with what you're trying to do as well. So
now, I got to say, I truly appreciate it. I really, really do. I think we, you know, I can't say how much we really need that. You know, we really need that. And can I say just, you know, also, I just want to emphasize the whole, you know, America and the song and what it's all about and reelecting Barack Obama, because you know, I just feel like if I can make a difference, so can everybody else, you know, by donating and making your voice be heard, you know. And, you know, I just want to say there's still, you know, not to push it too hard, but there's still a few hours to make this deadline to donate. Remember, again, the song is AndreSimone.bandcamp.com. Just, we really need people to get involved in this. That's really important because I think that's going to help, you know, a lot of this other stuff that we're trying to do, you know, to reinstill some programs in schools, you know, and make it possible again for people to do what, you know, what happened for me and other people like me to be able to come out of, you know, the neighborhoods that I came out of. So I just wanted to say that. And I also want to say one other thing.
Sure.
Power to
sure.
the public.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something. Don't, you know, something else, don't stay away so long, sir. You were needed a long time. We want the funk back. You want the groove back.
I realize that now. I'm back, and I'm back to stay.
Sounds good. Okay. We'll keep in touch behind the scenes, and we appreciate you coming through.
Absolutely, man.
Mr. Andre Simone, folks. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, Captain, what were your thoughts? We had an icon come through, legendary bassist, producer. I love the Prince stories. I love the Minneapolis stories. And listen, he is a force to be reckoned with. You heard what he was saying. That he comes on stage, you know, he's going to bring the fire. I don't think the young people understand what it means to bring the fire. What were your thoughts, Captain?
Well, definitely all those individuals from that time period, they definitely could perform because they built the music from ground up. It was about the music. It's not just about getting in front of a video as you see today. So there you have it. Someone such as himself will be a force. He'll be galactical, as we talk about in the comic shop, once he hits stage. And so a lot of you young people have never seen anything like that. Is you really don't know what a real performance is. That's a whole other thing, you know? A whole other thing.
Well, I tell you something. I've seen footage of Andre Simone performing, phenomenal artist. And I've actually, of course, I've gone to see Mr. Nelson, as I say playfully. I've seen Prince live and I've seen The Time live. And those brothers, it's a whole different paradigm. And then, of course, you can mention a whole bunch of other artists, too. I mean, you could talk – I saw Lenny Kravitz perform live. I've seen James Brown. You know, these guys are cut from that same cloth. And when I see the newer artists, D'Angelo's not bad. I think actually Jesse Johnson is performing with D'Angelo. So we're seeing some of this starting to come back into the fold. So I would like to see a full turnaround. I think things eventually you do see things coming back around, Captain. So I think it's just necessary. I went to the Afropunk last month. You see the musicians there. Thousands of people come in there, but when you listen to the radio, you get the impression as if what's happening on wax is different than what's happening on live. I mean, the live musicianship, the audience is missing something. If you're just left to the radio, you're going to be in bad shape. That's all I have to say. If you listen to us, you'll get the real deal. But if you're listening to conventional, traditional radio, you're going to have problems. Captain. Captain, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Okay, all right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, sir.
Any closing thoughts? We only got about 2 minutes remaining, Captain.
Well, when you point the finger at somebody, you have three fingers pointing back at you. Always remember that. And it was a pleasure to have Andre Simone stop by tonight. Thank you very much for that, sir. It was very entertaining. It was refreshing, and it's a force that we need right now in the world of music.
Definitely, definitely. Folks, again, this is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. We had intended to talk about other issues as well, but, you know, when you have someone of that caliber, again, we're talking about someone who was a phenomenal musician in his own right, coupled with the fact that he was part of the Minneapolis sound. It's just too much going on for an hour. So sometimes these two-hour shows, Captain, between Daryl B., and his stuff in the first hour, and then Andre Simone comes through. Sometimes you just can't seem to, sometimes you put too much on our plate. But our audience is aware of that, and we do put a lot on our plate because we want to give you our all. So it is what it is. As I mentioned during the show, folks, we're going to have Ms. Lena Dawes. She came through last week. She's back again to discuss her new book about her involvement in the heavy metal industry. So that should be quite entertaining. All right, folks, it's been real. We'll be back on Wednesday. We appreciate it. This is You Gotta Shake Something. This is Mr. Simone's friend. See you on Wednesday.